I think that a tenth of a Bitcoin is generational wealth. People that are not here now, they're going to be paying $100,000 for a tenth of a Bitcoin. Right now, it's very difficult to picture that. I think this year, I think Strategy is going to be included in the S&P 500. Eventually, I think they're going to end up with 4% of the Bitcoin. I really do. And, you know, unless I see something happen, like we talked about, a black swan event, and you know, that's another thing too. You mentioned that, you know, a tenth of a Bitcoin. That's not just to say you get to a tenth of Bitcoin and then you go sit on your ass somewhere, okay? Eat donuts. That's not what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, you're gonna still work and stack. And what I'm talking about is for yeah, I am worried about that. I actually am worried about that.
What's up, guys? Before we get started, I've realized that over 50,000 of you guys keep coming back for every single episode. And while I'm eternally grateful for you guys to keep coming back, I've realized that 79% of you guys are not subscribed. So I have one small ask before we get started. If you guys could hit that subscribe button and hit that like button to help send this interview and many more to the stratosphere, it would be greatly appreciated. All right, enough for me. Let's get into the show.
Bing bong, we are back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast with the man, the myth, the legend, George Bodine in the house. We were just talking pre-show here about, you know, how little of Bitcoin that you need just based on where it's going with everything. So I think that's a really interesting conversation. Let's keep diving into that. How much did you say pre-show and why do you think that you only need that amount?
Well, I've gotten, like I said, I've gotten a lot of flack for this because I think that a tenth of a Bitcoin is generational wealth, and I think it will be in the future. I think people will see that and understand it. Right now, it's very difficult to picture that because most people aren't able to understand the total addressable market, the TAM for Bitcoin, and it's off the charts. You know, Crocius, Jesse Myers just updated his global equities, asset valuations up to like $1,000 trillion now. And when you think about that and you try to picture how much of it is utility, how much of it is actually an attempt to save your wealth, and you look at that market cap, just take Bitcoin right now and project in the future when we overcome gold. Right now at $22 trillion for gold, you know, that puts Bitcoin over $1 million a coin. And we are going to flip gold. It's inevitable. I mean, Bitcoin runs circles around gold. So as that continues and goes forward in the future, now, when I say, you know, a tenth of a Bitcoin, that's not just to say you get to a tenth of Bitcoin and then you go sit on your ass somewhere, okay? Eat donuts. That's not what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to still work and stack. And what I'm talking about is for someone that's young, like yourself. I mean, at your age, if you had a tenth of a Bitcoin now, you're not going to sit down and go somewhere. You're going to keep working. You want to stack and continue. And, you know, in the future, as people begin to realize and understand the value of Bitcoin and it enters traditional markets and traditional finance, this idea that you're stacking for the future will become much more obvious to other people. You'll see that you'll have to work to earn Bitcoin. It's not just something that you'll be buying. You know, people are very upset. The unit bias that's in Bitcoin right now is off the charts. Bitcoin, I'm too late to Bitcoin. It's too expensive. I can't afford Bitcoin. And I think that people will realize in the future that that's not true. You will have to work for Bitcoin, but if you can just, at a young age like this, or even like 40 years old, you know, if you can just get to a certain number, I'd say a tenth, but whatever it takes for your lifestyle, I think you'll have generational wealth. I really do.
Yeah, so let's keep diving into that, the whole number bias. Like,
yes.
Why do you think that it's such a stress on there? Like, why? What do you think that is either the gap or what? Because I agree with you, like 0.01 Bitcoin is, you know, potentially somebody's retirement plan out here, right? You just got to hold on to it for a little bit. If you have that time preference. But, you know, I hear it all the time from people my age. Oh, I could buy 1,000 of whatever coin or whatever it is. I could buy, you know, 5 or 6 shares of whatever stock it is, opposed to just, you know, a tenth of a Bitcoin. So why do you think there's that whole number bias still?
I think there's a couple of things there, but I think the most important thing, a couple of things. Let's just start with the first one. It's the numbers, you know. Mm-hmm. It's that 100,000. Now, for me, when Bitcoin went over 100,000, it just felt, you know, natural. I mean, I wasn't up, you know, I wasn't partying. I didn't pop any champagne. Well, maybe I did, but the thing is that it wasn't a, it just wasn't that unexpected for me. But I think for a lot of people that are just starting to maybe get into Bitcoin now, and, you know, retail really hasn't arrived here. We haven't seen the FOMO yet. But for those people, when they look at the price of Bitcoin and they say, oh my God, $100,000 for something that I can't even put my fingers on, you know, like a bar of gold or jam up my ass or something. I mean, you know, those people are really struggling to get a handle on what that means. And then, you know, the other thing is, it's this idea that they look back in the price history and, you know, you go back to the crypto winter. And I did this. I bought a tenth of a Bitcoin or more because I was stacking. You know, it got down to 17,000. So I paid $1,700, and I'll use the same, you know, analogy for my parachute. I got a tenth of a Bitcoin, and let's just say I put it in cold storage. That's my parachute. And now people are looking around. They're going, I don't want to spend $10,000 for a parachute. Now, I will say to them, well, guess what, jackass? You know, in a few years, you're going to be paying $100,000 for that tenth of a Bitcoin, that parachute. And if we're on the plane, if we're up there, and, you know, I actually have parachuted twice in my life. Once, not, I had to. I mean, I ejected from an aircraft. And so, you know, when I looked up and saw the chute, I thought, wow, this really is great. I was pretty happy. But the first time I jumped out of an airplane was just for fun. And that was not fun. That did not go well.
It was for fun, but it wasn't fun.
I ended up being drug across the desert out in the middle of somewhere. And there were power lines. And I mean, it was just a nightmare. But the thing is, if you're in the plane and we're all sitting there like that, and I've got my parachute, I bought a tenth of a Bitcoin, and the plane's on fire. Suddenly the engine's on fire. We're going to die. You're going to die. I've got my parachute. But the thing is that, when you start thinking about it, not just life and death, but if you start to think of Bitcoin as one of the most important things that you can have for your, to secure your future, to protect yourself as a sovereign individual against everything, well, then what are you really saying? I will do what I take. You know, that guy is standing behind me looking at my parachute, wants it. I'm not giving it to him. He doesn't get my parachute. Mm-hmm. But if there's one behind glass, break glass, you know what? He's probably going to break that glass. He's going to pay $10,000. At some point, those people that are hesitant to get into the stacking sats now, just DCA, people that are not here now, they're going to be paying $100,000 for a tenth of a Bitcoin. And the thing is, what I know I'm ranting here, but I'll stop a minute. The last thing I'm going to say is this. We're talking now like just plebs, like us right here, we're just plebs. We're talking like that. Mm-hmm. These other people that are coming into our space, they don't give a shit. They don't care about $100,000 for a tenth. It will mean nothing to them. It's an allocation as part of their program, their strategy, their corporate, their pension, their insurance fund. All these people that are coming, they don't care.
Well, let's dive into that because I want to, yeah, we were talking a little bit about this, how, you know, the adoption this cycle, right? It's businesses, corporations, Bitcoin on the balance sheet. It's politicians. It's big dogs coming in with a lot of capital, yep. Right? Like last cycles, and I think that's the main difference between like, you know, 5-6 years ago and now, is that before it was retail, retail hasn't even really come in yet. And
yeah, you're right.
It's all the big guys coming in, and they're coming in and they're going to come in quick. So how do you think that this is shifting? And yeah, where do you kind of see it going?
Well, you know, that is the difference in this cycle. And you can see it in the difference in the price, the way the price is behaving. This is a different cycle, a different Bitcoin than when I, you know, even last cycle, I've been in Bitcoin now for over 5 years, and this is different. And I call it like a stair-step surge, is what I'm calling it, because we are going up and up, and it's going to continue going up and to the right. But the thing is that what's so different about this, starting at about 53 to 58K, is we've got these stair steps and then with further accumulation. We made a big jump up from like up to 73,000. And we did come back and kind of fill in that air gap there, you know, as far as demand and supply. But since then, you can see it. It's almost a relentless underbidding of Bitcoin. And when we have these significant drops, instead of these massive volatility spikes down 40, 50%. I think the most I've seen lately is like 25 to 30% in a drawdown. And, you know, that's unheard of. I mean, this last cycle I was in was down to almost 80%. And, God, I hate to say this time's different. And, God, you know what? This is being filmed. I mean, people are going to come back and go, look at that idiot. But the bottom line is, I do think this cycle is different. I don't think we're going to see those drawdowns. There is an incredible underpinning strength in bid, and it is not by retail. You know, you can, the ETFs, now, I will say both River, I think VanEck have put out some data that shows that a lot of the purchases in the ETFs have been by retail and high net worth individuals. That's true. At one time, it was up to 80%, they projected. I think it's probably down around 60% now. But the thing is that's also unique about them is they're using them like I have in some of my projects that, or products. They're using it like an ETF, like a wrapper. So most people involved in those type of ETF purchases, they're not traders.
Yeah.
And that's a difference too. But what I'm talking about are we've got over 90 companies now that are publicly saying we're putting Bitcoin into some either treasury balance sheet, we're accumulating Bitcoin. Then you look at the ETFs, what, $120, $130, you know, billion dollars now, $70 billion for IBIT. You know, that's incredible. Do you know that that is the most successful launch of an ETF project product in the history of finance here in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Actually in the world. And it, what most people know, it's sixfold. It's a sixfold over the nearest competitor. You know, GLD in gold took 5 years for them to get to that market cap. BlackRock did it in like 14 months.
Yeah.
So it's here. And, you know, we said it was last cycle. You know, I was full of shit then. I'm still full of shit. You know, if you're listening to this, just realize that I am often a village idiot. And, you know, I often say things that I get wrong. And, you know, when I get things wrong, I mean, I'll say it. And I definitely have gotten a lot of things wrong in the last cycle. Institutions did not come in the last cycle, but they're here now. They're with us. They're in the perimeter. You know, the tripwires are set. They're amongst us.
Yeah, so let's dive into the institutions a little bit more, because I think, you know, it's interesting in the fact where we've had Michael Saylor, right? He's going to be speaking here at Prague where we're here, legend, and he's been essentially, you know, just putting out all these new products, Strive, Stride, all these different things, these variations of MSTR. Oh. Yeah, and just keeps finding ways to accumulate more Bitcoin. But I think the interesting part of all of this is like Wells Fargo's even coming out and saying the unsung hero of 2025 is that Bitcoin is tapping into the $300 trillion bond market. Yes. That's Wells Fargo saying that. That's not just, you know, us plebs saying that, yeah, right? Yeah. So others are starting to recognize that. And like you said, there's 90 plus, I think it's even over 100 at this point, of publicly traded companies talking about Bitcoin. So how big do you think that is of just tapping into the bond market and all of these corporations? Do you think it's, you know, because they're, like you said, they're not going to be trading or anything. So what do you think that means? Do you see it as a positive or negative? And how do you see that kind of developing over time?
You know, that's a deep subject there, because, yeah. I mean, we're talking about, and now, as I mentioned, Jesse just updated his charts, and I think it's up to like $370 trillion, he estimates, in fixed income. You know, you mentioned those three products, you know, they're called perpetual preferred, but just think of them as fixed income product, and they're producing a yield. It's Strike, Strife, and Stride, and this last one is non-cumulative. So it doesn't have to pay out a dividend, but it's yielding like 10%. You know, the actual real yield on some of those early products are between almost 11.5, I think, and then the other one's like 9.7%. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So what he's doing is he's building out the yield curve, and he's attempting in this last earnings call that he put out there, which was a good one. My favorite has got to be that last quarter, or the third quarter last year. But this one was a very good earnings call, because they're laying out exactly what they're trying to do. They want to get these products vetted and rated So they're not junk debt, and they're not. I mean, that this last one I just mentioned is so over-collateralized. I think like six times. You know, these products, for them to, for MicroStrategy to ever fail now, you know, Bitcoin, the latest projection I saw would have to go down to like $17,000 a coin and stay down there. Now, let me ask you something. If, considering our parachute discussion and stuff, if Bitcoin went down to $17,000, what would you do?
I mean, I'm selling my car, selling some houses, you know.
You're going like, to sell be sitting there naked.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'm selling like a kidney.
Exactly. You'll have scars.
Yeah.
You know, your teeth will be gone, hair, yeah. Everything else. So I guess what I'm trying to say is this market is huge. And I don't think they've even tapped into it. And you know, what most people don't understand that's unique about Strategy too, and Saylor's even hinted at this. First off, they shop these products. And what do I mean by that? God, there's so many things to talk about. Who built these products? Who built those three perpetual preferreds? Do you think it was Saylor in an office somewhere?
I think he's been brainstorming this stuff for a while with a group of people, huh?
No, with AI.
Ah, okay.
At least the first two products he has admitted, and I think it might have even been in the last earnings call, that it is AI that developed these products on the timeline that they got, which was remarkable. Mm-hmm. And I don't doubt that AI was involved in the the building out of this last stride product. But what also Michael has said is, hey, guess what? We develop a relationship with these fixed income markets.
What if I told you never had to sell your Bitcoin? Instead, you can borrow against it with Salt Lending. Why give up your hard-earned Bitcoin when you can unlock its value without letting it go? With Salt, you get secure Bitcoin collateralized loans with no credit checks, no prepayment fees, and best of all, no rehypothecation. Salt has had zero customer collateral losses since it launched. Salt was the first platform to offer Bitcoin collateralized loans starting way back in 2016. Today, they offer tailored options for both individuals and businesses. And now introducing Salt Shield, the no liquidation solution. No forced liquidations during the lifetime of your loan when you're enrolled with Salt Shield. This just launched at the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, and it is next level peace of mind. For Green Candle listeners only, head to saltlending.com/green-candle for this exclusive offer for your Bitcoin collateralized loan. You can get cash for your Bitcoin today. Salt Lending, secure, trusted, proven.
We develop a relationship with these fixed income markets. They come back to us, they tell us there's certain things we want in the product, there's certain things we don't like in the product, and they are tailoring these products for that market. They're building a long-term relationship with these fixed income buyers, QIBs, qualified institutional buyers, and they are developing a market for these products, and that market's going to expand. Let me ask you this. Pick any fixed income product right now where you're going to get 10% yield out there.
Yeah, you can't find it.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And if I'm correct and these products really don't have the risk level that they're being rated at, that means you have an asymmetry right there. You have the ability to know something. If you're listening to this or you watch this right now, you know something now that TradFi doesn't know. And TradFi doesn't know Bitcoin. Why do you think we've been able to get in here and, you know, outrun these pricks? It's because, you know, we've done the work. People like you and me, just ordinary guys, you know, that sit around, have a beer, but we like to listen, learn, we like to explore, and look at what we've done. We've outrun these bastards. And that's not easy to do. Yeah. So I think that answers your question. I think that these products have a long life in front of them. I think we're just getting started. I think we're building out the yield curve. I think we're going to see more and more of these products come up. And there are going to be some maxis out there that again, if they had poop emojis, they'd just throw them on Jethro. Because I'm talking about products that they're going, well, just buy the fucking Bitcoin. I understand that. But you got to remember, you know, there are other people out there that have different needs and wants. I mean, let's face it, you know, you got your 80-year-old dad or something, he probably would like to, if he's got some money, maybe he would just like to get some income stream that he needs for something, or someone else. That you don't know what people's needs and desires are. And I think that there is a legitimate place for these products. It's not like owning Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bitcoin is that's the ultimate. But I still think that this is an interesting market.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because of how many, I think, products that I just still haven't been developed around it, right? It's like Bitcoin is essentially, like you said, revolutionizing the fixed income market. It's revolutionizing how people are looking at bonds. BlackRock is even saying, we're seeing the bond vigilantes go towards Bitcoin this cycle too. So it's just changing the way people are looking at how they're dealing with their money and allocating. But you said something like kind of interesting there, and we talked a little bit about it pre-show, about how you've basically looked at how you're allocating everything, right? Like sometimes these products are necessary, sometimes it's just Bitcoin. So how do you see this kind of, I guess, changing the game, not only just for personal finance, but just like finance in general? Like, do you think every single product is going to have some sort of Bitcoin backing here in the future? Like, it's essentially going to scoop up everything?
Oh, I don't. That might be a far reach.
Okay.
Are we talking maybe more like hyper Bitcoinization, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way I look at it is that right now Bitcoin is just, you know, a small asset relative to everything else, right? But it's going to start to make its way into every single product, right? We're going to see businesses start to put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So then, you know, people who own the S&P 500 own some exposure to Bitcoin right now, and that most of them don't even realize it, right? Because Tesla has Bitcoin on the balance sheet. You know, maybe we'll see like one of the Mag 7 start to put it on. So, you know, once you own some sort of stock, okay, you got Bitcoin. And then who knows what happens with, like, you know, home prices and everything like that. But I think like eventually people are going to be like, all right, well, Bitcoin is really the true answer, and it's just going to take time to develop there. But that's going to basically change the way we look at finance.
Yeah.
Because if you really just look at Bitcoin relative to all of these other stocks, majority of them are down compared to Bitcoin, right?
Yes.
Except for like MSTR and, you know, some of the ones that are actually holding Bitcoin. So I'm curious kind of how you see this like evaluation. Because now we have the MNAV that they're talking about, like all these different, you know, ways to evaluate companies, Bitcoin per share. So do you see this as basically becoming the norm here pretty soon?
You know, that's a good take on that, because when you think about how does Bitcoin permeate within the financial industry, whether it's asset allocators, pension funds, insurance funds, you know, when I say the institutions are arriving, they're here, mm-hmm. but you know, they're not doing jack shit. I mean, they've got their little tiny toe. You know, if I had my socks, I could pretend I'm dipping.
I got
toe.
my little hole
and
in
really
the sock.
I'm really proud of you. You're a stacker. But the thing is that they've got the tiniest allocations. You know, even Abu Dhabi, everybody was talking about their allocation. I think it was $436 billion, but you know, it might have been 436 million. It doesn't matter. When I actually did the math, it came out to like 0.04% of 1% of their allocation. They're not here. And you know, Wisconsin, I heard that they just divested some of their Bitcoin, or maybe what they were really doing was rebalancing, you know, mm-hmm. because it's gone up so much.
Yeah.
So they're here, but it's almost like they're afraid to really enter the space in any sizable allocation. You know, the other side of what you're talking about, this idea that these products and that the balance sheets are going to start expanding across different companies and treasury operations and things, I see that happening. It's happening. We know it is. I'm a little concerned about some of these companies. This is not strategy, you mm-hmm. know. Strategies told us, I'm not selling my Bitcoin. That they just said, we're not selling Bitcoin. Metaplanet, if you listen to Simon, he said the same thing. We're not selling Bitcoin. We're here to accumulate as much Bitcoin as we can get. You saw the incredible fiasco of GameStop, and we're going to go half into Bitcoin. Wait a minute, that's too much. We'll go a quarter into Bitcoin. We'll get a little bit of Bitcoin, but we're really not. If it pans out, you know, if it works out. Well, that didn't work so well for them. And I'm kind of curious here, if we have a significant downturn, I mean, what's going to happen with these companies? Are they going to bail out on, will this cause a cascading deleveraging? You know, that was the crypto winner last time, was we had all these leveraged, you know, rehypothecated products out there that we just weren't paying attention to. And when the deleverage came, it just, it's a cascade. It's like a virus, you know, once it starts in one spot, it just keeps going. So yeah, Bitcoin is, for instance, just take what's going to happen here within the next few months. Well, I think this year, I think Strategy is going to be included in the S&P 500. So now every jack, you know, everybody is going to have a slice of Bitcoin, whether they know it or not, because that is, the S&P 500 is like, you know, that's the basis to so many of these funds that are, you know, providing a product to people saying, you know, we can return more than the S&P 500, and they include it in their products.
Yeah, I mean, that's retirement funds. Everybody's retirement fund has some sort of S&P 500 thing in there, pension funds, everything, right? Like, the amount of money getting dumped in is just going to be exponential. And then Saylor's going to be buying so much Bitcoin, it's going to be crazy. I mean, I don't know if we've even seen some of his biggest buys just yet. And I think it's crazy that we just saw him like buy another $1 billion worth of Bitcoin here this past week. So, I mean, you know, it's like, how is this guy getting all this money? But I think we're just kind of seeing it get started here.
Well, that Stride product, you remember what they initially said? We're going to go with 250 million.
Yeah.
What, it came out $1 billion.
Yeah.
And again, they're shopping these products out. And as they're doing it, they're working on, so what yield will it take for us to get this, you know, this amount of money at zero interest or whatever?
Yeah.
And it's oversubscribed, $1 billion. And so now they're at $592,000 Bitcoin. Eventually, I think they're going to end up with 4% of the Bitcoin. I really do. And their cost basis now is over 70,000, 70,666. Six hits the mark of the devil. But the thing is that, yeah, they're relentless.
Yeah.
And that's why the market is rewarding them too. They're clear. That's the other thing. You know, they have painted a very clear, easy to understand picture. They've shopped it out. You know, Saylor's done a great job of being transparent about what they're doing, and he hasn't faltered. So the market rewards him.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I think the interesting thing you lined out there is like how much money he's able to get at like basically 0% interest rates too. But you said something a little bit ago about these companies, like, you know, are they going to be genuine? I honestly think, you know, not the FTX maybe fiasco of that big of an explosion, but I think we're going to see a few of these companies blow up.
Yeah.
Because like, it's just, that's the new fad. Do you feel the same way where you're going to see some of these companies, all right, we're a zombie company, we got nothing going on, let's just throw a dart at the wall, let's put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. I feel like that's the next last ditch effort. And that's going to be the new FUD following this cycle.
Yeah, I am worried about that. I actually am worried about that. You know, it's one of those, unknown knowns, you know, that we're always trying to, you know, we're trying to anticipate. And I think about that once in a while. I think about, well, what are the threats to Bitcoin? There are threats to Bitcoin. I mean, I'm embroiled right now in the controversy over op return, but it's actually much deeper controversy than that. I'm concerned about the honeypots that we're developing, you know, through all these ETF products. I am concerned about what you just brought up there, because again, deleveraging is just what I said. Once it starts, you know, once it begins, it catches fire. It's like a virus. That is what a bank run is. And I don't want to see us engaged in bank runs from people that aren't convicted in the asset, that are doing it because it's the flavor of the month. And I do agree with you. I think that we're seeing that. And the good news that some of those companies are not being rewarded as they were before. You know, at one time the headline was, we're putting Bitcoin on our balance sheet, boom, the stock takes off.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes, like we saw recently, it's like, boom, the stock goes down.
Yeah.
So maybe the market is sniffing that out. But I do think that some of these companies are going to end up selling. You know, the really interesting concept there is having to do also with the products that we talked about in the NNAV, the KPI that's being used as a metric. Because really, what should a company do if their NNAV falls below one? Think about that. Now, as an investor, you might say to yourself, oh, I'd buy that company in a heartbeat. But what should the company really do? You know, they probably, for their shareholders, should consider selling their Bitcoin. And that might be counterintuitive, but if you think about it, what they did is they use leverage, if you want to call it that, to purchase that Bitcoin. And now it's almost like they're getting a premium in reverse. We'll just have to see. I don't know how this is going to pan out, but I'm very curious and I follow it constantly. And, you know, I'm just very interested in it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I am as well. You named a few doomsday scenarios. I don't know if I want to put another one in your head here.
All right.
But one thing that really worries me that you didn't bring up is the amount of Bitcoin that Coinbase has custodied, because they custody 9 out of the 11 or 12 ETFs in the US, and then they also, you know, custody a lot for these corporations.
Yes.
So there's been rumors floating around about the paper Bitcoin that they're issuing all of this, right? And something I think that's unique is, you know, you lived through the Nixon times as well, and I want to get into that, you know, as a step further. But you know, going through this as like the ultimate doomsday scenario as like a paper Bitcoin, as so many people are coming into this space and it's just, you know, new to them, I feel like this could be the, you know, the Wild West at a certain point, because we just have so few players in the custody game. Do you think that that centralization of that is a big threat to Bitcoin as well?
Yeah, I really do. I actually think it's one of the biggest threats, is that it's this concentration of Bitcoin. It's a, what I call a honeypot, and other people do too. And, you know, I'm really concerned about the biggest thief, which would be the government.
Yeah.
The U.S. government. I am concerned about that. You know, obviously I didn't live through 6102. I'm not that old. But we can talk about Nixon, because I remember that really clearly. But the thing is that, and this is where I really disagree with Saylor, that conversation he had about why 6102 is not a threat to Bitcoin, I disagree completely. Because when you think about it, yes, it's true that Bitcoin is not like gold back in, you know, 1930s, where it was part of backing of a currency. Okay, I get it. I know what the difference between currency and money is. But what he's not acknowledging here is the ease of seizure. Bitcoin is, you know, when they tried to seize gold, it was both easy and hard. Easy in the sense that at the time, many ordinary people, just like you and me sitting here, they had their gold in banks. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Once he put out the proclamation, you could go into your bank and say, I want my gold. You weren't going to get it. So it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, later they took a haircut, about 40, 45%. I mean, the government, you know, just said, screw you. We've got your gold now. But it was very difficult to get people to release gold that was in their homes or in a backyard or coins. Eventually, they came for coins too. But what good did it do you? So let's just say that you had gold, you know, a gold bar stuck in a tree somewhere or in a, you know, buried under a root cellar. What could you do it with it for the next 70 some odd years? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It was meaningless. But the difference now with Bitcoin and a digital asset with final settlement, with keys, cryptography, means that whoever has it, has it. And you know, and I know it's hard for people to project that there'd be a crisis to the extent where the US government felt like it needed Bitcoin. But imagine if they did. Mm-hmm. Do you think if they went to Coinbase and said, you know what, we'll give you these cuck bucks, we'll print up a bunch of these little pieces of paper, just like they did in the 30s, we'll revalue them once we get that Bitcoin. Bitcoin will go right through the roof, but they'll have it. And then your little cuckbuck pile, you'll be sitting there, and you know, you'll be able to light a fire in your house and have a nice warm, you know, fireplace. But what I'm trying to say is, if they wanted to seize that, it'd be very easy to do. and want, and yeah, I mean, you know, it's a ledger. I mean, you're not going to hide, and they won't. All these companies that are custodying Bitcoin, even, you know, custody programs that we're using maybe for our own security, whether it's, you know, custodial solutions with multisig and stuff. If you're ever identified as a bad actor right now, today, like they just say, Jethro, you know, he's a whatever. And you know what, we're going to seize his assets, or we want his assets frozen. They'll do it, and mm-hmm. it'll happen in a heartbeat. And I don't want to go down this, you know, I don't want to go down a dark road right now and have people going, well, gee, I'm worried now about Coinbase and stuff. Because a lot of people, you know, Coinbase is the solution for them right now. You know, you get somebody that's like 60 years old and they said, finally said, hey, I'm going to get some Bitcoin. And their son says, well, you can go on to Coinbase and get it, you know, and it's sitting there and they can look at it. You know, I'm not saying that that person should panic, but I do believe that the ultimate solution as a sovereign individual, as a Bitcoiner, is to have custody. And, you know, if you have custody, if you know those 12 words, you're golden. You know, nobody can fuck with you. I mean, you can basically cross a border. They can strip you naked, do probing. They can probe all they want. You know, and if you've got those words memorized at the end of the, I mean, when you get to the other side, you just flip them off. Go on your merry way with all your wealth intact. There's no threat. It is a bearer instrument. So, I kind of got in a dark spot there. But to answer your question, yes, I am concerned about it. And I do think it is a threat.
Yeah. No, I mean, I gotcha. But yeah, we mentioned Nixon. I want to talk about that time too. So I don't want to get too dark with you here, George. But
I'm not a crook.
Yeah. But, you know, do you see any... similarities to maybe the economy then as you did, as you do now. And, you know, because we're seeing a lot of inflation, but they're telling us on CPI prints, hey, it's at 2.5%, 2.8% or whatever it is. And a website that I always love to show and kind of bring up is it's called govflation.com.
Uh-huh.
You can go there and it looks at how CPI was calculated in like 1982. So like the first, I think, change post 1971 was like 87 or something like that to the basket of goods. So, you know, if you look when they're promoting that CPI is at like 2.5%, it's still over 10% if you look at the basket of goods in 1982. So basically the government is telling us, hey, everything's fine. But then we have Trump saying, you know, lower interest rates. And we have Powell saying, I don't think we're out of this water yet. So I'm not going to lower interest rates. So we have this weird dichotomy going on here in the government.
This bull run, I'm looking for ways to stack Bitcoin in my sleep. And mining has always caught my eye. I've partnered with the guys over at Simple Mining to help you do just that. I don't recommend anything that I don't use personally, so I've got a machine up and running with them right this second. And they've even opened the facility up so anyone can go and visit. They manage over 15,000 machines for 500 clients, handling all of the maintenance and repairs so you don't have to. And for the Green Candle listeners, they're giving an exclusive offer. All the repairs for the first year for free. So if you've been thinking about mining, head on over to simplemining.io/greencandle to get this exclusive offer and learn about the potential tax benefits that you can get from mining with Simple Mining. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show.
And it seems like nobody really knows what's going on. And I'm curious if that kind of like parallels any when around the Nixon time.
You know, I don't necessarily think it does because, you know, this is not the same scenario, both in what was driving inflation and where we were as a nation to respond to it. You know, we had tools that we could use, and it, you know, when Volcker came in, he used them. It mm-hmm. was a really brutal time. I will tell you, I do remember Nixon coming on and telling the nation. He didn't say that he did say, in so many words, we're closing the gold window of repatriation. But he framed it as an attack, a speculative attack on the dollar by speculators, and that was why he was removing us from gold. And, you know, he also at the same time said that, you know, there wouldn't be really any change in your life, you know, going forward. He was really wrong about that because within a few years, I mean, my life, the world went to shit. I mean, I remember being, and they had to, here's the other thing. So, you know, immediately thereafter, I mean, things really did start to, the dollar started to really come unglued. So they knew they had to come up with a new, something new to back the dollar. And of course, what came out of that was the petrodollar. And by 75, you know, they started really working on that in 73, but by 75, all the OPEC nations were on board with that program. And what did they have to do? They had to inflate that asset group in order to be able to hold and handle treasuries. Well, you know, as a consequence, you know, gas went through the roof. I paid like 18 cents a gallon one time when I was a young man. And you know, it may not seem like much, but gas was going up like maybe a couple bucks a gallon, and it was unheard of. People were in line. You had odd days. You know, people were pushing cars to gas stations to get gas. I mean, it was incredible. But the worst fallout was what happened later in the 70s and then early 80s, and that was the inflation. I mean, I've lived in a world where inflation was 14%. Where I mentioned this before, a home mortgage at one time, a 30-year, I think, got up to about 18%. My wife, who had just started driving around that period, she had a car loan at 21%. I mean, these were outrageous, and it affected people's buying behaviors. We changed as a nation. I mean, people would spend money. Why would you hold on to money? You couldn't save, you know. And so people were spending and sometimes buying stupid things like appliances they didn't need for because they were going to be more expensive the next year. And they were right, they were. So it really affected the mentality of the nation. But what I was saying earlier is that at the time, I think our debt to GDP was probably around 30-36% or something like that. So Volcker had, he had room. He had, he had, there was runway there for him to fight this. And that, you know, we don't have that today. That, you know, nobody's going to go in there and jack up interest rates up past, you know, even 5%, I think, on the long end of the curve right now is scaring Bessent. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Bessent's had a couple of weekends where he's gone home and he's made alcohol a bigger part of his life because, you know, his world kind of sucked lately. And, you know, so far for him being able to, remember he said he, you know, lambasted Yellen for being on the short end of the curve and you know, the all, turning over all of our nation's debt on the short end. Well, guess what? He's doing the same thing. And, you know, you talk about interest rates and what that does. You know, when you're up at $1 trillion that we're paying on interest right now on the national debt, that's a significant chunk of change, bud.
Yeah. I mean, it is a lot, right? So that's why Trump's kind of telling us, hey, we need to lower interest rates and we need to do it quickly, right?
Yes.
So what do you think of that? Do you think that we should? Or do you think that Powell's in the right? Because I think, like, I mean, I could see both sides. So I'm like, I don't know, man. I guess we're going to see what happens.
You know, I think that, I think Powell's days, you know, are well, we know they're numbered one way or the other. You know, in May, he'll be out of here. You know, it's such a complicated question because there are so many things. It's, you know, we think that interest rates are the only way that they're manipulating, you know, the liquidity, and that's not true. I mean, there are so many different programs that they have to inject liquidity, whether it's the repo market or, you know, even the bank term funding program, you know, after Silicon Valley collapsed. I mean, that was a form to inject liquidity into the system. And the Treasury and the Fed, sometimes they're like going like this because one is tightening and one's loosening at the same time. You know, I don't think I can answer that question. I don't know where this is going. And I don't know which one of them is right going forward. I'm clueless.
Yeah, I gotcha. Well, let's get back to kind of like the Nixon days, because you talked about the 80s and kind of the revolution of the way people looked at money, which I think is very interesting, because we've also seen the development of like using credit, personal credit, right? Credit cards, they're a newer product, but somebody like myself, this is like kind of, you know, if you don't have a credit card and you're not building credit, like you're doing something incorrect. So do you think that there was a big shift in the way that people looked at money just in general once that happened? Because, you know, you saw inflation and then now, hey, you know, money is kind of free. You just got to pay it off later, allegedly.
Yeah, you know, and what's really weird is if you take that forward to where we are today, and then you start to think about Bitcoin and lending products, I'll just touch briefly on something from that period that I lived through, is that most people were so, they were so enmeshed in it, it's like you're in the fire. This isn't like the frog being boiled. This is like, oh my God, you know, the world's, it's turning very quickly, and I don't understand what's going on. My money's becoming worthless. I guess it's almost like you get to see what it must have been like in some countries that have gone through this process, where maybe they've gone into hyperinflation. We didn't, but I mean, where they can see this happening, but it's just occurring so fast that you don't understand it. Especially in the U.S., you think the dollar's stable and you're sitting there and you're having a great life, and the next thing you know, the shit hits the fan, and you're going, well, what is happening here? And you're just thinking about surviving then, and your wages aren't keeping up, you know, and they couldn't. I mean, you know, when you've got inflation 10-14%, your wages, you're not going to go in every 6 months to your boss and say, I need a raise at such and such level. So people started falling behind. You know what's really interesting, though, is if you carry that forward to today and you start thinking about these lending products that are coming out, that's another thing. This is a revolutionary period in Bitcoin right now for all of these products that are coming out and going to be coming down the road, whether it's a lending product that's based on Bitcoin, or if it's a Bitcoin mortgage, or like the Bitbonds, these type of products that are coming up. You know, I think we're going to see a revolution in financial instruments backed by Bitcoin. I really do.
Now, with that, do you think that there's a risk there, right? Like, you're lending against your Bitcoin. Like, what are you? Is that something that worries you? Like, because we're talking about the companies like earlier. I know I'm getting you in dark place.
You got me into these worries.
Yeah,
scenarios.
I'm sorry, man. But I mean, we're talking. Like, I mean, I feel like all these new developments of all these products, right? Everybody, when you first get into Bitcoin, right? Buying Bitcoin's a risk, right? Taking Bitcoin off an exchange is a risk, right? All these little things that when we're first starting are a risk, right? And then you just get kind of used to that risk because you're like, you know what? I got it. You know, every day or once in a while, I'm checking my keys, making sure I've got it, you know, and then you get more comfortable. You know, your first Bitcoin transaction, you're freaking out, you know?
Man, I know.
You're doing these little things. And then now we're like, okay, you know, we're having these lending products. We had, you know, BlockFi, you know, Celsius, all these kind of things blow up. Obviously, you know, we've got a little bit more regulation around that stuff now. You know, the industry as a whole is a little bit more developed, a little bit older. So, you know, I'm still kind of like, all right, you know, I'm going to kind of test the waters, but I'm not going to go full all in on like lending against Bitcoin or anything like that, because that still kind of is a worry of mine. So I'm just curious because, you know, you're talking about revolutionizing all these different products too. And it's a new area. So how would you, I guess, kind of view it as it's coming out? Because everybody was worried about Saylor too, putting Bitcoin on the balance sheet. But as you're saying, you know, as you said, he's like, I'm never selling. And, you know, he seems like a guy that is really true to his word. And all accounts are pointing to that. But as we're seeing more new players and new big dogs come in, there's always that, you know, little tension there, you know?
Well, let's just enter the Death Star. Let's just go into the Death Star, okay?
Yeah.
Let's go into J.P. Morgan.
Yeah.
You know, Jamie Dimon.
Yeah.
Evil incarnate. I shouldn't say that. You know what? You know, maybe he's a nice dad, or he's got, you know, maybe he was nice to his mom. He's probably not totally evil, but he definitely has not been anti-Bitcoin. But yet, what did J.P. Morgan just say? They're going to start offering to their institutional investors and to high net worth individuals the chance to evaluate your Bitcoin just as you would art or real estate. That is, it's pristine. Well, in our case, we view it pristine collateral. Mm-hmm. In their case, they're just going to say, hey, it's collateral, just like it's wealth that you hold within your balance sheet, and you should be able to take a loan product against that. So anybody out there that's listening, just realize that if you hold Bitcoin, you hold a bearer instrument, and it generates no yield. There's no yield on Bitcoin, okay? None. So that means every yield, every product that offers you yield, it's on you. It's on your shoulders. You're a big boy. You know, pull your pants up and figure out where is the yield coming from, because it's coming from somewhere. And it could be just the fact that these financial institutions, these asset alligators, are going to want Bitcoin. They're going to want it on their balance sheet. if it is pristine collateral, then it should be worth something. And if it is, I think these lending products, for instance, we have lending products now, and Strike just, you know, recently came out with theirs. But the problem for me is that these interest rates are so high, 12 to 14%, that it doesn't make sense for me to use those right now. I view Bitcoin as the best thing that one of these companies could have on their balance sheet. And therefore, I expect to be paid in the future. You know, I expect to not have to pay more than SOFR, the overnight funding rate, and about 1 to 2%. And that means I should be able to get a loan for like under 6% on my Bitcoin. And the problem is, again, you're going to have to figure out, are they rehypothecating? You know, I wouldn't want to have my Bitcoin in a product like that unless I knew that they were publishing proof of reserves and I was comfortable that they weren't lending out. Or if they were lending out, then I want to be paid for my Bitcoin. If I had, you know, I don't have 10 Bitcoin, I'm saying, but if I had 10 Bitcoin and I wanted to lend out one of them, you know, and I'm at my age or something, I expect to get a hell of a lot of money. When am I going to sell my Bitcoin? You know, I tell people you should never sell your Bitcoin. And I caveat that, meaning like, let's just say you do have some medical problems or you want a house or, you know, yeah, if you've got enough Bitcoin and you can afford it, go ahead and do it. But just realize the cost behind that decision you've just made. And when I say you're never going to have to sell your Bitcoin, what I'm talking about is the future. Think about a time in the future where you are really holding this asset and everybody wants it. You're going to have products that will allow you to hold your Bitcoin on for perpetuity. You won't have to get rid of it. And you'll receive a yield on it. You should. It will be the pristine collateral in the world. And that's worth something. What is it worth? You know, I hold my Bitcoin here. That's where it is. It's in my fist. And nobody's prying it out except for a really good price. I mean, it's going to take a lot.
Yeah, and I think like what you're saying here, right, is that it's pristine collateral. And it's kind of like what Jack Maulers was saying in his talk at, you know, Bitcoin Vegas. I don't know if you got a chance to check that, but it was basically about his new collateral products where he called it the hodler's dilemma.
Yeah.
Where it's like, all right, like you said, I never want to sell your Bitcoin. But, you know, I know that there's new products. I've had CJ Constantinos on the show recently. He's building out People's Reserve for mortgage backed. And, you know, it's going to be a house with Bitcoin. And it's like a one-to-one product, which is very interesting, where a lot of these products that are coming out is like, you know, you can get maybe 50 or 25% LTV comparatively. So I think the revolution of this is just starting. But, you know, I'm curious how you see this developing in a hyper-Bitcoinized world. Do you think that, you know, right now as it stands, Bitcoin is, you know, the pristine and ultimate collateral? Do you ever see us getting to, like, maybe that medium of exchange or anything along those lines? Or do you see it as maybe, hey, you know, at the end of the day, the governments still want to have the control of the money printer. They still want to have control of these things. And, you know, Bitcoin, because it can't be corrupted, that the corruption still wants to live on.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm gonna help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
Yeah. Yeah, because you know, my base use case for Bitcoin has always been store of value. That is how I view it. But at the same time, it is a medium of exchange. I'll do it right here at the conference. I just put some money in a wallet. I use Aqua Wallet, and then I've got picked up one of the BitKey products. I think what it is.
Yeah, nice.
What is that? Jade.
Yeah.
Is that,
Yeah, no, that's Blockstream. That's Blockstream Jade.
That's Blockstream, yeah. Jade. And so, yeah, and I'll spend it. And you know what? We already know, you and I know, that we've been in the space long enough to know that Bitcoin is a medium of exchange if you want it. Now, on the Lightning product, I was just talking to Larry Lepard last night, and he said, you know, if you put, at some point, you know, it won't take large transactions, but it's going to get better. It's coming in. It's just getting better and more liquid all the time. River put out a great, great report not long ago using proprietary data from Voltage, I think it was. Fidelity just put out some information about this, and so did Bitwise. Matt Hogan was talking about this. You know, you're going to be able to earn yield just in the Lightning Network.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what Block did. Did you see that? They had their node took in, I think they had a $10 million liquidity product for their node. They took in $1 million, 10% within a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. And what's funny is that those reports I mentioned before, they all discuss the fact that you would be able to generate yield on Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the transactions that are falling off on the network right now, the blockchain, I do think that one of the contributing factors to that is the use of Lightning. And as more and more L2 layers scale, you know, we might see that further. I mean, it's a complicated question, but, you know, there are all these products coming. I really think that CJK, that Constantinus, I think that his product is just really exciting. I think the Bitbonds are exciting. I think that all these different products that are coming out, again, you're just going to have to be very cautious, I think, going forward. You know, bud?
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. And I think, you know, what you said, too, the first person I actually talk about that I heard talk about the yield on the Lightning nodes was Caitlin Long.
Oh, wow.
Because she said that's where she thinks the revolution of banks are going to go. Because obviously, you know, she does Custodia Bank. They have like a 100 to 108%. So whatever you have in that bank, you know, there's going to be 108% of that reserves in there, which, you know, obviously fractional reserve banking and everything like that. She's run into some hurdles, to say the very least. But her, when I had her on, you know, maybe a year and a half ago at this point, she was talking about, hey, with banks, you can put your Bitcoin with this bank and they're going to put it in the Lightning node and you'll be able to, you know, earn that yield back because they'll essentially just have that, right? And then the 108%, you'll still have the 2% potentially with all of this. And I think everybody else is starting to catch up to that. Cash App, you know, it's like the biggest Bitcoin provider in the US, I believe, right now.
Yeah.
And the unique thing about Cash App too, if you've ever used it, is that you can only send a $999 Lightning transaction right now. They cap it at that, which is interesting. But I think that, you know, as the way that this is shifting, we've got, you know, Cash App talking about this. We have Amboss as well, who's another company that looks at businesses holding Bitcoin and utilizing Lightning. They've talked about, you know, the yield generating products as well. So I think, like, you know, this is just kind of getting started with this too. So I think just the traditional financial world is just slowly kind of figuring it out how we can utilize Bitcoin to create these products that everybody has essentially gotten used to at this point, right? Because we've seen, you know, like we were talking about, the development of these loan products, credit on all that. So I think there's an interesting time. But you said you had dinner with Larry last night.
Yeah, we were sitting out. We went down there at the square. That's a really, you know, in Prague, that's really neat. We were sitting there just, you know, watching the tourists and the natives having fun and stuff. But it was neat and, you know, having a cappuccino and sitting there. It was fun.
Yeah.
I love this place.
Yeah. So he's of course talked about The Big Print.
Oh, great book.
Yeah. So shout out to Larry with that. It's an outstanding book. He actually gave me a copy while we were in Vegas. So he's the man.
He is.
So what do you think of the just like overall state of that, of the economy and, you know, the potential of that Big Print coming? Do you think that's inevitable as Larry's lined out?
Yeah, we were talking about that last night because, and I've mentioned this before, and, you know, obviously I'm not a macro genius here. I mean, I am like the 80 IQ pleb, you know, I'm blundering along here. I've gotten some things right. Bitcoin, I got that nail. I nailed it. But the thing is that I don't see going forward how when I said, you know, liquidity injections, I don't see how we can avoid that. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to need a massive amount of money. And you can say money printed, you can say injected, but they're going to need more money. And currency is, you know, money's not currency. I guess these will be cuckbucks that are injected in the system. And I think it's going to be a really painful period when we go through that. I really do. But as far as the dollar itself, you know, the dollar could limp along for a long time. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the dollar milkshake theory, but, you know, the idea that the dollar could suck up more and more liquidity across the world is a very real hypothesis, because look at, if you look at central banks' foreign exchange right now, mm-hmm. did you know that the dollar in those holdings across the world is at 60%?
Wow, really?
Yeah. And like the Chinese yuan's like at 2.2%. In fact, you know, just look at the attempt by the BRICS nations over the last 2 years to try and siphon off dollars in the global liquidity transfer system. You know, has that really been successful? Not really. If you look at the amount of dollars that they're trading across the system, it's nothing. I think China, again, was over like 4% or something in back and forth transactions. You know, these aren't large amounts. And just think about the Chinese currency. First off, there's two currencies. There's an on and offshore. Mm-hmm. And if it were ever allowed to escape, you know, without those capital controls that Communist Party puts onto the Chinese currency, it would collapse. I mean, people would escape in a heartbeat. I mean, if I gave you a bag full of Chinese shit coins, you know, paper coins, and even put them against a dollar, okay, and they were equal in amount for the moment that I gave them to you. I said, here you go, buddy. It's $1 million worth of Chinese shit coins and $1 million worth of dollar shit coins. Which one would you drop and take and run out the door with?
Probably the dollar, yeah.
You would. And so I'm not sure the dollar's going anywhere, but the problem is that the dollar itself, as we know it, I mean, it's not, in my mind, this weakening that we're seeing is probably will continue. I guess maybe if things really get bad, you know, I hate to start talking about like black swan events, you know, especially kinetic war. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to change things too. You know, that the responses we've seen to treasury yields has not been the normal response in some of the latest controversies. But I think if you have a really significant black swan event, I think, again, people are going to flock to treasuries.
Yeah, I think they'd flock to the dollar as well, right? I mean, yeah. It's just like we're not there yet for Bitcoin. But I think it's interesting that we're seeing such of these big swings in just the markets in general. Do you think it's just because of how much liquidity that we've had here that, you know, we're seeing S&P go up like 20%? Like, I mean, I had a buddy who just got into investing not too long ago, and he was like, oh, you know, I could only get 20% on the S&P 500. And I'm like, what are we talking about? Like, you know, it's like 8 to 12 used to be the norm. Hey, just, you know, put that in there. But now it's like, oh, if I'm not getting 20%, I'm doing something wrong, which is, I think that mindset is just, you know, crazy. And that's why we're seeing so much volatility and, you know, the FOMO investing, that kind of aspect is just going to accelerate here. So is that something that you've kind of noticed as well? Is that, you know, the way that things are being evaluated, these products, all these things are changing drastically?
You know, he must think like maybe he doesn't think he's a genius, but you know, many people I think feel right now that they're probably geniuses in their investing. But aren't you just like I am? Like, I'm trying to figure out why things are behaving the way they are right now, because mm-hmm. it doesn't make a lot of sense when you think about it. You know, for one thing, the Trump administration has made it clear that they want foreign investment out of our markets. Mm-hmm. And they have been pulling out of our markets, including, you know, asset allocations into equities and things. You know, this globalization that we've seen over the last, you know, 20 some years, I'd say it started with the admittance of China into the World Trade Organization. I think that is unraveling. I mean, we are entering a new world. And you know, the tariffs that we're seeing, I'm sure you're familiar with all the whipsawing that we had, you know, when those first came out. Talking about Bessent, that weekend on the 4th,
I think it was April 4th
when that came out, that weekend when he went home and the Treasury market tanked. And the bonds, I mean, he must have just been like beside himself. I'm sure he had a come to Jesus moment where he was thinking to himself, you know, what are we doing here? You know, this volatility that we're seeing, I don't think it's going to go away. You know, the key to surviving this period, and I'm glad your friend's doing well in the S&P and investing in different stocks and stuff. But you know what? I really think the key to this is to have things that the government can't print. And that means Bitcoin and yes, I say gold because, you know, I used to hold gold. I mean, I was a gold bug and I don't hold gold today. It's all in Bitcoin. But I do understand people's philosophy or silver, things that just can't be printed. Because if we're right about liquidity coming into the market and the dollar, you know, struggling going forward. And you see, that's the conflict right there, isn't it? Will the dollar struggle? Mm-hmm. Will the dollar take a bid going forward? You know,
yeah.
I don't know the answer to this question. I really don't. I just feel like I'm in uncharted territory. And you know, I follow Lynn very closely. I've subscribed to Lynn Alden's newsletter, and she has some really good takes on this. But at the same time, other than her saying nothing stops this train, which I do believe that is correct, that we're not going to stop what we're doing, that this is going to be fiscally driven, then I think going forward, it's going to be a very difficult time for a lot of people. Hold Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's interesting because we're talking about the volatility here in just general markets, regardless, right? But the narrative around the Bitcoin space is like, hey, maybe we don't have these cycles. We're not going to have these big drawdowns. I personally think that we're going to get more volatile because really? There's more money coming in and then the liquidity is going to be more, right? So, and Bitcoin's the most liquid asset. So when things are crashing and burning, people are going to be pulling out of the most liquid asset. Like you can't sell your house on a Saturday and get the money on Sunday, right? You can't do that. It's going to 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, whatever it is. Stock market, same thing as it stands right now. So as Bitcoin benefits from the 24/7, 365, it's also going to see the swings out because I think we don't have retail in yet. We are getting a lot of these big players, but when retail comes in and when, you know, asset managers are actually like, hey, you know what? We're going to allocate a 1 to 2 to 10 to 20% allocation of our portfolios for our clients into Bitcoin, because I still think they aren't there yet. When they start doing that, those guys I think are pulling out pretty quickly. And that's where I think we're still going to see the volatility. But the narrative, I think, is interesting because everybody's like, we're not going to get we're going to get less volatile in Bitcoin. But if you look at everything else, it's more volatile. So do you think we're going to have that decoupling where maybe Bitcoin just kind of like steadily goes up? Or do you see it kind of like the way I see it, with the big swings still kind of coming through as we're getting more volatile and as the dollar is, you know, becoming the shit coin of all shit coins, basically. Yeah,
yeah. A bag of shit coins.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's a bag of shit coins.
Yeah.
And, you know, after you ran out of the door with that bag that I gave you,
yeah,
what would you do? You'd go buy Bitcoin.
Exactly.
You'd save enough money for a sandwich maybe downstairs. And you'd say, I think I'll just put the rest in Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly. I won't buy any more socks, that's for sure.
No, you don't need them.
Yeah. But
you need Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You've got to get as much Bitcoin as you can.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a great, I'm glad you brought this up. I hadn't even thought about talking about this, but I'm really glad because I think this is the big question right now. This whole question about cycles, what is going on with cycles? And again, you know, I'm often a village idiot, but I mean, I do study this. I'm constantly reading about this because I want to know what's going on. First off,
the best place to buy Bitcoin in the United States and Canada is the Bitcoin Well. You could go to the bitcoinwell.com/greencandle and sign up today, and they will give you wishing well tokens. They are one of the only exchanges in the United States that will give you free sats every time you buy Bitcoin. You have a chance to win
1 million sats every time you buy. You get Wishing Well tokens. You flip the coin down the Wishing Well, and you have the chance to win 1 million sats. You heard me here, folks. 1 million sats. And on top of that, they have the absolute best over-the-counter service where you can make purchases over $50,000, and they will walk you through the whole thing. They have the best rates in the United States and in Canada. And on top of that, they have the best white glove service where they will take you through those giant purchases just so you feel comfortable. You'll get it in cold storage, and it's strictly non-custodial. They are saying, we want you to experience the true power of Bitcoin, and that's self-custody. So go to the well, sign up, bitcoinwell.com/greencandle today. Enough for me, back to the show.
One thing I'm going to say, and it kind of counters against the volatility thing you're discussing, is size of market cap. $2 trillion makes a difference. It's hard to move it. You can't. It's not a $100 billion asset anymore. It's $2 trillion. It's like a carrot. On board an aircraft carrier, when you launch I launched on the F-18. Soon as you take off on the bow, the very first thing you do, well, first you're glad that you made it. But secondly, when you launch in the F-18, you don't have your hand on the stick. You actually take your hand off the stick. It's programmed, so you don't hold the stick. If you hold the stick, you screw up the launch. So, you salute the guy smartly, and then you get launched. It's a lot of fun. But once you get launched, as soon as there's enough air on the airplane, you take the control stick, and you just take a little cut away from the carrier. And the reason is because right there you're vulnerable, and if you go in the water, if you go splash, the carrier is going to run over you. It's going to run over the top of your plane. So you take a little cut away. Well, what most people don't know is the reason is when the captain, if he's up on the deck and he sees you go splash, he goes, stop. He yells out, stop. All stop. Well, it takes 5 nautical miles for that carrier to come to dead in the water. 5 nautical miles. It's got weight. It's momentum. It's size. And we have size now. And I see the market cap for Bitcoin just going up and up and up. When I talk about overturning gold, and we will flip gold. Mm-hmm. When we flip gold, you're looking at 20, I'll bet by then it'll be $25 million or $1 trillion market cap. We're going to flip that. Well, you know what? You're going to have trouble moving that market significantly. Are we out of cycles? Are the cycles gone? We're right at that crux. If you look at cycles and you look at where we are right now, this kind of mirrors the 16-17 cycle, if you go from the base of it and then go up. But you know what? Right now, we're on that place. Is it going to follow that cycle? Or is it just going to keep stair-step up and to the right forever? And so one, I think that market cap is really important. Two, what's changed is the nature of the underlying bid to the asset. Again, it's relentless. We are making 450 little Bitcoin a day. That's it. Mm-hmm. 165,000 in a year. There are companies that are right now, buying twice that in the last year. The ETFs, it's relentless. And you're looking, they've got 1.1 or 2, 1.1 or 1.2 million coins now.
Yeah, they've got over a Satoshi.
And they've got five times the inflow to outflow. And that's not stopped. So, there's this strong bid. And it seems like every time, I call this the stair-step surge. Every time we go up, we're plateauing. Sometimes we fall off a little bit. But there seems to be a bid that just keeps pushing it up to the next stair-step. Then we chop along there. Finally, we have a base there and we go up to the next one. It's a very healthy bull market. And I don't even think we've seen, I don't even know if we're really in the bull market yet. It's like, it's just a strong, healthy, and I follow on-chain. And right now on-chain, if I were to look around, I'd say, and somebody said, is it a good time to buy? And you look and you go, it's 100, and I didn't look at the price today, but whatever it is, I'd say, well, yeah, it to DCA into it, yeah, it's a good time to DCA. There were some people that were following on chain, and when it dipped down, you remember it was up about 83, 80, and it was bouncing around there. And when it went down and wicked down to 79 or something from that, it went up in the 90s and then wicked down. Man, I'm telling you right now, if I'd had money to invest in it, and what that would have been a buy time for me for sure. So, I don't think that I don't think the volatility so far, I'm seeing it. Mm-hmm. It's not there as far as like what we talked about, the big drops, you know, the 50, 40% corrections have been very mild right now. So going forward, I kind of project the same. You know, I know that, yeah. I know you're saying volatility, but for me, you know, unless I see something happen, like we talked about, a black swan event, and you know, that's another thing too. You mentioned that. Yes, you're right. In certain events, Bitcoin couples, it correlates to one with all these other damn assets. And often it's because it's 24/7, 7 days a week. You know, it's the liquidity that everybody wants to get out of the market. It's like, God save me now, Bitcoin. And that's all I got to fix me, because Monday I'm going to get margin called. And, you know, yes, Bitcoin does couple up. It correlates to one. And guess, and then you just saw that, maybe you saw the data or not. I can't remember who originally put it out, but if you look at Bitcoin after it couples up to these major crises, within 60 days, it's outperforming everything.
Yeah, so it's like just the short-term volatility, yes, though, right? Yeah, and so, I mean, I agree with you, right? We're getting to this bigger, you know, market cap, which is going to make it harder to move, to say the very least, right? There's going to be more money. But I think the unique thing with this is like what we were talked about at the beginning of all this, right? We're dipping into the fixed income, we're dipping into the bond market, we're dipping into all these things that, you know, gold didn't really necessarily dip into. So it's a new revolutionary product, you know, revolutionary money. It's like a once in a lifetime thing, where that's why I think, you know, we're going to still see these swings, at least, you know, in the short term, as we're getting the potential of the big print. I think everybody's waiting for that QE to happen. And, you know, as Lawrence put out, and I think everybody here in the Bitcoin space, it's inevitable. We got Trump basically banging the drum, yeah, saying, hey, pal, I'm going to come and kick you in the chest here and just get you out of here pretty quick. Or, you know, lower interest rates. You have one or two choices. So, I mean, we just had that FOMC meeting like the other day. He didn't lower as projected, but, you know, we're going to have that happen again in July, and then they're going to have to refinance that debt. And, you know, we got the big, beautiful bill come in, potentially some more spending. So I think the liquidity in the market, it's just all starting to shift more and more towards Bitcoin. And as more liquidity shifts, even with that higher market cap, it's just more money in there. Right. Yeah. So like we have the different players. We don't have the guys trading. But I think, you know, that's where I think this cycle is going to be very unique.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how this plays out, because, you know, one of the problems is that the U.S. government, I mean, everybody knows we have a debt problem. OK, and I'm not just talking about the $37 trillion. I'm talking about just on a yearly basis. This, and, you know, this budget bill that they're putting out doesn't fix any of that. In fact, it probably is going to get worse. You know, they're calling for $115 billion expansion of the Defense Department budget. That's huge. Yeah. It'll put them at $1 trillion. And so when you think about it, how much money do we take in a year as a nation? We take in about $5 trillion. We spend, under Biden last year, before he was out, we spent $7 trillion. This year, under Trump, we're going to spend $7 trillion. We're going to still have, you know, the same deficit we had before. You know, Musk, I applaud what he was attempting to do there, but, you know, they went from $2 trillion to $1 trillion. I'm going to be generous and say that they got $186 billion in saving. That's not going to make a difference here. And, you know, this debasement of our currency, like you said, the idea of a big print, I mean, it has to continue. There's no way out of this. So again, what's the answer? Just protect yourself, Bitcoin, hard assets that the government can't print, and you'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, as Jack Mahler says, right, you should never work for something that somebody else can print, right? So, I mean, it's just seemingly like you're on this hamster wheel. The only way out, the parachute that we talked about earlier, is Bitcoin. But I think it's unique, you know, with all of your life experience that you've gotten to this point. Now, what do you think? Like, do you think it's a collection of all of, you know, your life experiences? Like, what was kind of that aha moment? Why do you think that, you know, maybe not a lot of boomers have found Bitcoin yet? Is it the tech? Is it something that scares them? What is, like, why were you able to find it, but not too many other people?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because I ask myself that sometimes. You know, it takes three boomers to open a PDF file. And I'm probably one of them. but the thing is, I did get Bitcoin. And, you know, I think part of it is because I was at a very unique spot. You know, in 2004, I had something happen, like a personal crisis. And I don't really want to talk about that on camera. But I will say it was also coupled. The reason I'm getting to this is because it was coupled at the time when my company went bankrupt. And then a federal judge ruled and they stole my pension. I mean, they took it. They just took my pension. And so I had no pension. My company went through bankruptcy. I took a 50% pay cut. I went through this horrible personal nightmare. And, you know, I was like at the end of my rope, man. I was in a bad place. Mm-hmm. Just a dark place. And then the great financial crisis came. Mm-hmm. And in between that period and the great financial crisis, you know, I came to the conclusion that nobody was going to save me and that it was just up to me and that I was going to have to become a financial advisor. Whatever the fuck that means. I was going to have to learn about finance and I was going to have to learn about products and how to, you know, companies and how do you earn money? How do you make money so that you can someday preserve it? You just have to get it first. And the, you know, the great financial crisis came along and then Bernanke, the prick, when in 2010, he said, you know, we're going to start QE and it's just going to go on. And it went on forever. I thought, I'm never going to be able to beat these people. And I actually got to see Bitcoin like in 2013 or so. And like an idiot, you know, I just thought it was stupid. And I kept investing in companies like Amazon and stuff. And you know what? I did create wealth. I mean, I did. And it was not easy. I mean, I worked at it. And so I finally get a pile together and stuff, and then 2017 I passed again on Bitcoin. But then shortly thereafter, not 19 but 20, early like January, February 2020, I had another chance to look at it, and then finally I got it. Thank God. So why, you know, why did I get that in? Because none of my buddies do. Mm-hmm. You know, I go out elk hunting. I go out. I got a bow. I strap on a bow and a backpack. Hike back into the backcountry in Colorado all by myself sometimes, but lots of times I have a hunting buddy who'll show up. Sometimes we'll sit around and have bourbon, you know, at a campfire. And I've been talking to this guy for 5 years about Bitcoin. He's never bought any, never mm-hmm. bought a dime of it. And if you're listening out there, Aaron, I love you, buddy, but man, just get off your ass and get some Bitcoin.
Come on, Aaron, do it for yourself, man.
And none of my buddies, my coffee friends, none of them got Bitcoin. It's like, you know, you're just talking to the wind. It's frustrating. And you don't see many guys my age that get it, you know? So, you know what? I think the best way to frame that what you just asked is this. Saylor, you know, like I said, he's gotten some great gems out there. And one of the best things he ever said is, you get Bitcoin when you need it. You know, you grasp it, you understand it. It's when you need it. And you know, when in 2020, like January, February came around and I was looking and I started getting into Bitcoin and I really needed it. I wanted something that couldn't be printed and I understood it. And I've always liked to learn. I love to learn. You know, even mm-hmm. my age, I just took up scuba diving. I'm learning new things. I like to learn. And so I started studying it. You know, I couldn't get enough reading and studying Bitcoin. And, you know, it just clicked at the right time. And thank God it did. You know, today I don't have to worry about jack shit. I mean, I have all my money in Bitcoin. Everything's in Bitcoin. And I sleep sound. I don't care about anything. And, you know, we're talking about things like the government printing. You know, print away, you jackasses. Go ahead, devalue my money. Because you know what? My Bitcoin's going to get worth more. Mm-hmm. And my purchasing power in Bitcoin goes up and up every year. Mm-hmm. I can buy more things if I want to every year. And so go ahead, you know, fuck around with the currency, you know, screw around with people's lives. But for Bitcoiners, get on Bitcoin and, you know, you'll find that you can leave those people behind.
Yeah. Sound money, sound sleep, right? I love it.
I love that. I like that.
There we go.
I'm going to steal that.
Yeah, all right, go for it. Hey, you said it basically, that you're sleeping sound. But yeah, it's a, I mean, you know, it's interesting though, because you said, hey, your buddy Aaron, right? I actually have a story kind of similar. Like in 2012, we were college freshmen, you know, to date me a little bit. But I don't know if you remember, that was the year the Aztecs said that the Mayan calendar was going to end.
Yeah.
It was December. It was December 21st, 2012, right? So 12-21, 2012, which was coincidentally one of my good high school buddies' birthday. So as we did as 18, 19-year-old kids, we went to his college frat house at University of Texas. We didn't illegally drink, allegedly. I think you know, past all that. But he was like, you know, before we went and, you know, had our fun at the frat house and, you know, chopped it up with all the high school buddies who went all over the country, he was like, dude, you know what? We just had a talk come in. University of Texas, which is, you know, a very forward-thinking Bitcoin university now. But he's like, yeah, we had a guy come in and talk to us about Bitcoin. And this is the future, man. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, did you buy some? He's like, no, not yet. But, you know, I'm thinking about it. And I saw him like maybe a year ago. And I was like, hey, man, like that conversation always sticks out to me. I never bought it then. You know, I started learning about it when I got to grad school. And I like ran into another guy who said, you know, hey, I'm working at an internship at Apple. And one of his coworkers just retired off of Bitcoin because, wow, you know, he saw it shoot up so much. But anyway, like I saw him again recently and I'm like, you know, did you ever buy any? And nope, never got into it, anything like that. And I'm like, would you ever? It's like, I don't know, man, still to this day. And I'm like, dude, you were telling me about this in 2012. Like you've seen me, you know, basically shift my entire career all towards this. And you're just, you know, so I think to Sailor's point, like no matter your age, you're just getting Bitcoin like when you deserve. But the interesting thing that you said, I think, was before you even got to Bitcoin, you know, you started studying money and really going into that. Now, because there's so many of these different financial products that we've dived in, like it's kind of forced me to study and learn more about traditional financial stuff that I don't know if I ever would have before. Now, when you were first getting into it, that's kind of a unique thing because I think, you know, we're never taught any of this in school and that's kind of a hot button topic now. But, you know, I think that finance has just kind of revolutionized over the past like 2 to 3 decades. So what was it like kind of just learning about the stock market and all that was going on during that time? Because that was kind of like Warren Buffett's reign and like when he was kind of starting to first put out a lot of these books.
Yeah, in fact, you know, I followed Warren Buffett and it's one of the reasons why it took me forever to get into Amazon because, you know, it was hard to value Amazon. I didn't really understand at the time, but I did learn that, you know what? What you're really valuing is their potential, the future.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's their network future. Like, are they building a moat? Are they developing a product that everybody has to have? And, you know, I made one of the very first purchases ever made. You know what? Jeff Bezos may have actually delivered a book with that forklift for me because, I mean, I there were no PCs in houses. I had to go down to the library. And I'd heard about Amazon. I thought, I'm going to try this, you know, and I put in my credit card information, which just astounded, you know, all my buddies. They thought, oh, my God, you put that on the Internet? I said, yeah, I entered it into the Internet. They thought I was actually just like showing the cards to everybody across the world. But, you know, the thing is, that was a lot of work. And, you know, what I'd like to focus on for, you know, so that was so much work for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was endless and it never stopped. I mean, you know, I'd be reading constantly and studying and it was so much effort. And no matter how much work I did, it could be undercut by anything. It could be the Fed could come out, mm-hmm, and change the trajectory of all my investments overnight, just with their words. And what I really would like to concentrate in is my life today with Bitcoin, which means, yeah, I study Bitcoin constantly, but it's fun. I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I doing that? Why am I reading about, you know, spam filters and this op return and core and run, why am I running a node now? Why am I doing all these things? It's fun. It's enjoyable. And as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, I don't care what they do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to read, you know, I'm not glued to a 10K or reading to some prospectus on a company or wondering if the CEO is going to be, you know, doing something with his whatever that he shouldn't be doing and I'm going to find out about it on Monday and have to change all of my investments. I don't have to worry about any of it. So I live a very relaxed, easy life now. And I like that.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, because I think, like, a lot of people, like, in my age group as well, like, now are kind of running into, like, all right, I got to be a hedge fund manager. But the beauty of Bitcoin is that I just put my money in it and it's freeing. And I think, like, that's the kind of the conclusion you've come to as well. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it's just, you know.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just, you're just free. And, you know, again, I don't worry about anything. You know, sometimes I'll ask someone, I'll say, okay, are you concerned about inflation? Everyone's, you know, you talk to them, and if they don't say, well, I'm doing okay. Well, are you concerned about the cost of your home insurance, car insurance, travel, food? Do you go to the grocery store? And people are very concerned about this. And I just tell them, I'm not. Mm-hmm. I live in a world where that is meaningless to me. I am invested in a money, not currency. I'm invested in a money, a storage of wealth that goes up, you know, over time every year. And so I don't worry about inflation. I'm outside that system. That's the promise of Bitcoin, is that it can take you outside of all of those things that you're worried about, whether it's a company, whether it's the Fed, whether it's them printing dollars, you're outside and you're free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's the movement of Bitcoin as well. It's just like it's freeing. You can now focus on things that you want to do opposed to things that you feel like you have to do. I think it just will make people more happy as well, which I think is hopefully the new movement. And, you know, we're sitting here in a beautiful city in Prague. So I want to ask you there, like, you know, what are you looking forward to this week with all this? Obviously, the conference is great. The organizers are outstanding. But outside of that, man, Prague's a beautiful city. So have you gotten a chance to explore around a little bit? Are you looking for something?
I did. And, you know, I work as an artist, too, still. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a model lined up that I've hired. I'm going to meet her this evening. We're going to go around the city and get some reference photographs and stuff. And I'll probably try to produce some work from Prague for one of the galleries that I'm in. So I'm excited about that. Then I have another, I'm doing the same thing with a different model on Friday evening. So, you know, I'm involved in that. I want to see the city more. And then on a couple days after the conference, I'm going to do nothing but play like tourists. I'm just going to go run around and do stupid things. Like I'm going to go to a castle and stand there and gape at the walls and like I've never seen one before. And people will probably make fun of me. But yeah, it's a beautiful city. And, you know, I'm making beer a bigger part of my life this week.
There we go.
I love that Czech beer. I mean, it's as good as
they
say.
It is good, yeah.
It's as good as they say. It's clean, perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I actually went and did a little tour with the Trezor team the other day. And they took me like to this one castle and they're like, yeah, this was built in like year 1000, according to the records. But then they're like, the rumors are it was built in like 700. So it's like, you know, 1300 years old or whatever. And it's like, it's just incredible to tell the stories of, you know, it getting bombed and rebuilt and all the different types of, you know, architecture, the styles, all that. So it's a really interesting city. Are you doing anything else like after this, like European summer? You staying around here? I know you were here a little bit before, right?
Yeah, I've traveled a lot in Europe for art, you know, for painting and stuff. I think I'm going to head home. I've got to get ready for a few things, including I'm going hunting. I know it's not until like September, but at the same time, believe it or not, I start training now. You know, I put on a pack and hiking up and down hills, you know, shooting my bow and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's a big deal. And plus, I'm going to head out. We're going to take a trip out west. I'm going to do some scouting, and then we're going to go hiking up in the mountains, get more acclimatized to the climate there and the altitude. And so, got a lot of things on there. It's the Bitcoin life is a wonderful life. And you'll get here to where I'm at. I mean, if you just hold on to your Bitcoin, hodl that Bitcoin, you will get where I'm sitting here. I mean, I want everybody to be where I am, where, you know, you've spent a lifetime working, you've accumulating, learning, and you're sitting here and you know what? You're enjoying your life. You're doing the things you want to do. You know, everybody here has interests. And sometimes you're caught in the hamster wheel and you don't have a chance to just sit back and see who you really are and what you want to do in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I want that for everybody. It's going to be a really big, beautiful world that's coming forward. It's going to be an orange world. We're all going to be in it, and we're going to be just having a blast. You'll see.
Yeah, I love that. And then you said scuba diving too. One thing that I'm doing is like I'm trying to take surfing lessons all over. So kind of similar to you is like I'm trying to pick up something new when I'm traveling to all these things. Where's the coolest place you've scuba dived? And like, has there something that's just been like, wow, this is incredible?
Well, I can couple that discussion with both of those things because I really enjoy St. Croix.
Okay.
They've got a lot of different dives. I just went on a deep dive on wreck diving down there, and in some different wreckage they've got down there, and got certified as advanced open water, which is pretty cool. But my favorite experience with them was the year prior when I was just getting back or just starting this thing, and I was diving, and you know, I was with a little group, maybe 5 or 6 people. We weren't too deep, maybe 45, 50 feet down, but we were coming up on a barge. And as we were coming there, suddenly, you know, they just come out of like nowhere. They glide, and they're so, though they're predators, you know, a shark came out there. And he wasn't big, maybe a 5-footer, but that's big enough, it gets your attention.
Yeah.
But I didn't really care. I thought, well, he's just, you know, but the funny thing is he started kind of like circling around our group.
Oh, yeah.
And then his buddy showed up. And so I'm just trying to, you know, I'm looking at all the fish and I just thought, this is so beautiful. I'm having a great time. But every once in a while I'd look up, you know, I'd see more sharks. And so there at one point it got maybe about half a dozen, about 6 sharks. And they're all kind of, they got this weird thing where they're just kind of following us around. Well, it's come to find out. So I'm looking and there was a dive master. He was kind of leading us around like a bunch of little kids. And I noticed that he's kind of looking at the sharks. He's checking them out and stuff. And he's got a spear gun with him, and he kind of like this, and then he must have been timing it and stuff where the sharks maybe weren't looking or something. And I look down, there's a lionfish, and they're like a parasite to the reef right now.
Okay.
So he's looking around, and when he's hoping the sharks don't look, and he reached down and he shot that fish, and speared it. And you know the sharks at one they're getting pretty close to me a couple times. Actually, one time I reached my hand out like this,
like hit it on the nose or something.
And as soon as he hit that fish, that there was a shark over the side of me, and I saw him. I looked at him, and he put his fins like this and pulled the spear out of the fish. And as soon as he did that, shark like a dog came out like this and just boom right past my face. And I saw it open its mouth and took that fish, and I could hear it underwater. You can really hear. I could hear it crunching the fish.
Wow, that's incredible.
And the gills, out of its gills, you know, sparkles were coming out from the fish, you know, and it's just chomping. And their eyes close when he's chomping. And this wasn't one of those feed the shark things. I don't like to do that kind of stuff. I don't like to make animals like that. You know, I don't approve of feeding natural predators like that, you know, in groups and stuff. But he wasn't. He was just trying to get rid of a virus, if you will, on the reef. And so I thought, well,
that's incredible. That would have freaked me out, too.
That's a great experience.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully there's more of those in your near future as well. You've been very generous with your time, so thank you so much for joining.
Oh, you are welcome.
And why don't you tell people where they can follow you on Twitter, because you're a great follow, and I always love your takes as well.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. It's been fun. If you just type in my name in Google, George Bodine, it comes up. Everybody calls me usually Jethro or something. It used to be my call sign in the Navy. And on Twitter, I'm at Jethro111. If there's not a blue check mark next to my name, that's a scammer, you know, scum of the earth. And but otherwise, you can find me there. And, you know, I'm glad you had me on. Just remember, as we close this out, I cannot tell you how important it is right now to stay focused on just understanding Bitcoin, understand what you hold. Get as much Bitcoin as you can right now, you know, HODL. Don't sell your Bitcoin. Don't trade your Bitcoin. This is not the time to trade Bitcoin. This is a time to accumulate, and don't let people shake you out. And you're going to have the best life ever. It's going to be incredible.
Yeah. We got to go spear fishing with George too, dude. I mean,
I don't think I'm doing that.
All right. Well, I mean, maybe we'll go hit the scuba diving with you at some point in time, but you're a legend. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks.